परमेश्वरः गुरुस्साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ध्यानमूलं गुरोर्मूर्तिः पूजामूलं गुरोर्पदं मन्त्रमूलं गुरोर्वाक्यं मोक्षमूलं गुरोर्कृपा ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 It was a tradition in ancient times that spiritual truths should not be broadcast. As perhaps you remember, even Jesus Christ is supposed to have said that the masses will not understand, so I veil the spiritual truth in parables. Because people are not mature enough to understand spiritual truth. Even so, in India, in the East, the sages waited till the disciples, there were no disciples, whatever it is, the seekers, whatever one may call them, felt an irrepressible urge to find the light and therefore find the Guru. Such was the case with our Master Swami Shivananda also. If Keshava wrote from San Francisco, "Swamiji, I would very much like to renounce the world. I would very much like to renounce the world and become your sannyasi disciple. May I come?" Possibly, within a week, he would get a reply, "Please don't come. Practice yoga at home, do all that, I'll guide you, I'll serve you, I'll do wonderful things for you." And this young man, after having written and to ask for the master's permission, took the next plane, went to Rishikesh. "You have come? Wonderful. That is the right spirit. 2 days ago, the master signed a letter saying, don't come. Stay where you are. Now that he has come, oh, welcome, come in, come in, come in. The whole world has been waiting only for you to renounce the world. Come on, join." I have heard this with my own ears. A young man goes to the master, I'll give you a very real incident. This is one of the things that sort of gave me a shocking insight into the master's wisdom. This was before I joined the ashram. This was 1944, October or November something. The master was going from Rishikesh to Bombay for making some phonograph records. On the way, we met him at New Delhi railway station. We received him as he came from Rishikesh and then helped him get on to the train which took him to Bombay. There were just 4 or 5 young men who were his followers in Delhi. He enquired after each one of us, how are you, etc. And then came the turn of the only married man in the party. This man also had come from, his home was in South India. And he was leading a temporary celibate life. His wife was at home, had gone home. Huh? How are you? The master asked him. I'm all right. Where is your wife? She has gone home, Swamiji. Gone home means about 1,000 miles away. Let her stay there. Let her stay there. You lead an independent life. Let her stay there. Because he said the wife was in her parents' house. And innocently, he was a wonderful man. Innocently, he said, how long will I stay alone, Swamiji? You know, I don't try. I feel unhappy. That my wife is not with me. Huh? Is that so? Bring her. Ask her to come tomorrow. That is all. The master is not there to force his view upon you. If you feel within yourself that you have a duty towards your wife and children, etc., society, whatever it is, get stuck there, remain there. You are not yet mature for the other one. If you say, I must drop it now, the whole thing must go. I'll go, come on. This depends entirely upon the state of maturity of each person. Here there is no right or wrong. Here there is no superior path or inferior path. Each one of these demands a certain discipline to live what you and I call a worldly life, a life in the world, not quite worldly perhaps, a life in the world, facing the music, facing the battle. Every day facing the same boss, doing the same task, working for money, working for a living. This involves a certain discipline, a certain pattern. Give up all these things and become a swami or a monk or monkey or whatever it is. That's not a rosy path either. That involves its own discipline, its own price. One has to pay the price. They said, these ancient sages said, when the fruit is ripe, it will fall. They didn't have these artificial, whatever you call them now, ripeners. Bring unripe banana and shove it into these ovens and cook them. This sort of thing they didn't have. It is risky to say that somebody can pluck this young man, put him in a sort of oven to ripen in there. That's a risky business. He may not ripen, he may rot. It's also possible. One may not ripen in such circumstances, one may rot. This ripening must happen. One doesn't know at all. Do we? Do we know how a person matures? These are days when everybody is shouting from rooftops, sex education must be made available to little boys and girls of 3 years, 4 years. What will they understand? They may get frightened by the whole procedure. It needs a certain maturity to be able to understand. Therefore, wherever I have been, people ask this one question in self-realization: will my personality disintegrate? To them it means death. They are afraid of death, and therefore they are afraid of the non-existence of the ego. Will I remain I or not? That's most important. Stupid nonsense, I may not exist now. But they are unwilling to face this. Why? They are not mature. It is like a little girl, 3-year-old girl, trying to figure out how a child is born. It's impossible. How does this maturity come about? How did you and I mature, physiologically speaking? Do you know? Can you sort of review your life and say, yes, on December 23rd, 19, so and so, I matured? No. Did you know? Not at all. It happened. It just happened. We don't know how grass grows, have you seen? It's beautiful. It is not there. It just peeped out, tiny little thing comes up. And then you sit there watching. From the morning till night, you sit there and watch, nothing has happened. Next morning, you go, how did you make it? But it is growing. And the growth is so silent, so subtle. That maturity has to happen. One cannot make it happen at all. And yet, can I not make it happen? When I was a young boy, 6 years old, I was that small, and then I grew up, I became a mature young man. Didn't I make it happen? I ate, I drank, I slept, I exercised. Aren't these not necessary elements of maturing? Yes, naturally. So one cannot say whether one makes this maturity possible or the maturity happens. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for it, any rules and regulations for it. One is unable to assert one way or the other. We are unable to say, do nothing at all, the maturity will drop from the sky. It doesn't. Nothing but polluted air drops from the sky nowadays. Even when the rain drops, it is also polluted. Or possibly a few years later. What do they call them? Radioactive stuff will drop from the skies too. None of the healthy things drops from the sky. Maturity doesn't drop from the sky either. And yet, one cannot make it happen. We are caught, aren't we? I cannot wait for it to happen, doing nothing. I cannot make it happen, doing all sorts of nonsense. What do we do? How does one mature? Time cannot mature. Time cannot ripen anything. If you are under the impression that it is time that matures a banana, it's wrong. Time does not. If you cut the banana while it is not yet grown and keep it there, it will rot, it will not mature, it will not become fruit. One has to see under what conditions this ripening becomes possible. What are the conditions that accompany this ripening? It's wrong to say that make the ripening possible. No, no. That is what these great men, sages and saints and yogis have described in their teachings. They have observed life. They have observed maturity. They have observed how an immature person grows into maturity. And as they observed this growth into maturity, they have watched very closely whatever has been happening to that person. And they have incorporated this story of maturity in their teachings. Can I therefore assume Swami Shivananda says, first chapter, so and so. I sit down and examine myself. Have I? Yeah, I think so. I think more or less I fulfill the conditions of the first chapter. So I can go on with the second chapter, can I? Huh? Someone asked the master once, Swamiji, I want to learn and practice yoga. How many years course is it? Because, I mean, the master had announced a thing called Yoga Vedanta Forest University. How many years course is it? What are the fees? And do you award any degrees and diplomas at the end of this course? The master, who had organized the Yoga Vedanta Forest University, replied very beautifully. The Yoga Vedanta Forest University is a lifetime job. In one lifetime, you may be able to take a few steps in a whole lifetime. There is no set course. You will have to dedicate your whole life to it, and the maturity has to happen. since we are caught up in this, in a sort of stupid educational system, where the boy goes from one classroom to the other, as dull as he ever was. But somehow or other, he is able to get a few pass marks. And nowadays, with all this student revolution going on, the teachers are scared. So, if I flex my muscles and show him, hey, you know what I am? And he says, all right, I'll pass you. You're all right. The other boys will, I'll keep back. And at the, what does the examination reveal? The examination reveals just this. Of all the textbooks that the teacher and I happened to study during this 1 or 2 years, someone posed a few questions and a few of them I could not answer. That's all that comes out of this examination. The examination does not reveal what I know. The examination does not even reveal what I do not know. The examination merely reveals a small portion of what I know and a small portion of what I do not know. Now, on the basis of this, of the results of this examination, I am pushed from one class to the other, one classroom to the other, I am promoted. And at the end of this term, I get a degree. And I come out full-fledged bachelor or master or whatever it is. Since our mind is so thoroughly and terribly conditioned by this, we imagine that an 18-year-old boy, a 20-year-old boy, is a mature person. He's not. Just because I grow a beard, I am not a mature person. A goat also grows a beard. Not so important. Not so important. Maturity is something completely different. There are many old men in their 40s and 50s and 60s who are more immature than babies. This maturity does not depend upon physiological growth or biological age. It's a completely different thing. So that in our scriptures and legends, you find sometimes very young people described as geniuses and mighty aged people behaving like fools. Hence, one great poet, Sanskrit poet, said, Tejasam ki na vayasamikshate. They who are mature, don't look to their physiological, biological age. They are mature. That's it. And hence, we bring in our argument of previous existence. That if this young man shows signs of maturity, even though he is young, he has been a yogi even in his past birth. This maturity has nothing whatsoever to do with our physical growth. Therefore, one cannot do anything about it and pretend that since I have done this, I have done this, I have done this, and I am mature. No, not at all. I am not referring to anything or anybody. There are a number of schools, yoga schools and so on, where they have planned course. 6 years, you attain 3/4 of self-realization, and then ninth year, you get beyond, then you become transcendental, and then you catch up with that. Beautiful, beautiful, wonderful. I suppose it is more for fun than seriously. The master once wrote a very brief article, it must be in, I'm sure it's published in some of these books available here, called Samadhi in 6 months. Samadhi in 6 months. But the fun of it is, it's only a one-page article. Samadhi in 6 months. The fun of it is, you cannot put into practice what is said in the first two lines. Samadhi in 6 months is guaranteed. And what does the master say? Sit erect, you know. Look at the tip of your nose. Be steady, don't move for 6 hours. And don't think. 6 months is too much. Too long a period for this. You can have samadhi in 6 hours if you can do that. He was very clever. The master was very clever. Just now we were listening to a recorded talk by him. He says, move tactfully in this world. Move tactfully in this world. Tact. He had tremendous tact. He will tell you, self-realization, it is so easy. Close your eyes and say, Om. Open your eyes and see God. But I see Jagadamba. Who asked you to see Jagadamba? I told you, close your eyes, say Om. And then open your eyes and see God. Full stop. If you say, Swamiji, not possible. All right, come on. Type this letter. Or go and wash dishes in the kitchen. Something you can do. Something more sensible you can do. That's the point. The whole problem is not self-realization. Self-realization is not a problem at all, because you are the self already. You are not going to make it real. What is the problem here? We are caught somewhere else. We are clinging to the unreal shadow, mistaking it for reality. Now what am I going to do with that? What am I going to do with that? That is the problem. The problem is not one of self-realization. That is terribly easy. And if you change the word into God-realization, it I may even sound heretical. What is the hurry for God-realization? Huh? You know why people are in such a dreadful hurry to get married and so on? They see other people. He's a young man now. And I see his father, he's no longer young. His mother, she's no longer young. And so he says, in another 20 years I'll become as old as this man. So it's better to get married now and enjoy life. All this hurry to do something in this world is based on the fact that we grow old and die. Now, supposing somebody comes and tells you, you will be forever young, 23 years, 25 years old, and that girl will be forever young, 23 years old, you are not in a hurry to get married to her. You look after it sometime later. Now, since this God is going to be there forever, and I am also going to be in there forever, what is the hurry? What is the hurry in attaining the self God realization? It may sound heretical. Where is his anxiety? Doesn't that anxiety itself show that there is something wrong somewhere? Huh? What are we anxious about? Have you ever been anxious to become mature? As the child, she is sleeping very soundly. Is she anxious that I must become like mummy? No. She cannot. It's useless. Stupid. That six-year-old child, whatever she does, however miserable she makes herself in order to become like mummy, big like mummy, she will not become like mummy. So therefore, look at children. Look at children. Do they ever show any anxiety to become big like this? No, 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 no. That maturity has to happen. And like the child clinging to toys, we are also clinging to toys. The child, especially girls, I don't know why, they love to play with the mother. A little toy there, she puts it on her lap and says, bee, 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 bee. Lovely, beautiful. My baby. And that girl has to grow. As she grows, 7, 8, 10, 12. Slowly she looks at a young man. Something else happens now. The toy is no longer as real as it was 5 or 6 years ago. This little child, if you take her toy away, you are murdering her. You are murdering her baby. It's absurd. You cannot convince a child that this toy is made of plastic. Rubbish. Set fire to it. No, no, no. Oh no, my baby. I must put that baby to sleep. I must dress that baby. Before you knit a sweater for me, one for the baby. That's more important. Most of us are in that stage. To us, these toys are more real than real babies. It won't do at that stage to tell the baby, ah, rubbish, you will have a baby of your own. She says, this is my baby. What do you mean I'll have a baby of my own? This is my baby. When I am clinging to what is unreal, not knowing that it is unreal, not knowing it is a shadow. When I say unreal, it is not as though that we are mad. We are not that mad. Very clever people. We see a shadow and we do not see the shadow. We see it as some substance. We see the world. In fact, the world is whatever object I see outside is the projection of my own immaturity. But do I see it as that? No. Not at all. I think a cup of tea is good because I like it. I think whiskey is bad because I don't like it. Can I see an object without designating it as good or bad? Can you? Distinguishing one from the other? Can you? How do I know then that what I am seeing is the reality and not the shadow? We are not saying that we should refuse to see the shadow. Oh no. Let us see this shadow as shadow and the substance as substance. Let us be aware that this thing sitting in front of me, what is it? Can I? Or do I stick a label on it, calling it a beautiful young lady, or a great spiritual aspirant, or a saint, or holy, etc., etc. If I remove these two projections of my own immaturity, it is then perhaps I will be able to say that this is a glass of water, neither good nor bad. If I am thirsty or if I am choking, it's good. It's useful to me. If I am not thirsty, or if some kind of smoke has not entered into my throat, it's there. It is neither valuable one way or the other. It is neither good nor bad nor evil. In other words, my intellect, my intelligence doesn't get involved in this value judgment. The thing is what it is. First I should know that I do not know its actual inherent intrinsic value. What it is intrinsically, I do not know. Like this baby clinging to that doll, feeling that this is real. It's mine, it's my baby. I am also clinging to this man, he is my brother. Establishing a false relationship. There is a relationship, establishing a false relationship, a relationship based on false perception. And I call myself a mature man. The child is immature because it is playing with a doll. I am so mature, I am playing with adults. Nonsense. The same. They are going to make in a few years. They are already making also dolls that can cry and blink and wink and eat and sleep and so on. They are going to make a few in a 50, 60 years. They are going to make living dolls too. Dolls that can speak and dolls that can sing and dolls that can move around. That's what we are. Are we any different from them, from the baby? We have merely replaced one set of dolls for another and calling ourselves mature. Just like, for instance, we call, you know, go to any sophisticated American, he'll lift his nose up and says, "Oh, friend, primitive people." Who are the primitive people? They who sweat and toil and earn their daily bread. They are primitive people. Look at me, I just press a button and the lunch flows down. Ah, we are advanced, progressive. Are we? If I am also still hunting for my food, doesn't matter where. You may be going to your office in a Cadillac and hunting for your food there. But it is all breadwinning. The primitive man went direct to the source. You go around and beat about the bush in order to get a piece of bread. And there is more wrapping than bread in it. You are more sensible. He married and he did whatever, you know, was necessary after marriage, and he had babies and children and so on. Primitive. But no, we drink and then, you know, and then have a date and boyfriends and girlfriends, and we date them and go and take them to cinema and so on, and then tell them, "Oh, how I love you, you are my darling, you are my honey." The net result is the same, isn't it? Eventually it is the same stuff. Why not call a spade and get rid of it? Why all this beating about the bush? Is this called civilization? We are still playing the same game. We are still caught in the same snares. We are playing with the same dolls, calling them by different names. The primitive man, people killed one another. There were tribal fight battles and so on. Now, oh no. We don't fight on a tribal basis, do we? Of course we do. We call it different names. We have other names for them. Ah, but whatever it is, says somebody. You know, Swami, these primitive people were cannibals. We are not. Of course we are not. Are we cannibals? Are you sure? Or are you sure you are not cannibals? Do we eat human flesh? Of course you don't. You waste them, waste it. You waste human flesh. You kill others, don't you? Huh? Those cannibals are more sensible. They killed and then they ate up the, you know, saved an ecological problem. Oh no, we don't. Do you kill? Of course not. Do we kill other human beings? No, no, no. You know what we do? Oh, we are very clever, extremely clever people. And so cruel. I'll give you an actual dialogue. I was in Israel. Somewhere there was a discussion concerning diet, and I believe I said, I don't know, I might have said it, that whether one is a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, that's a secondary thing, let it come later, but first start practicing yoga. It's not to say that we encourage meat eating, but don't bother about all that. First practice yoga, all this will come later on. I must have said this. And one lady was terribly upset. Later I found out that she was running a health food store. That statement didn't suit her business. And She came up to a sort of camp we had and cornered me and said, did you say this? I said, I might have said. I don't remember, but I might have said. How can you say that? Do you eat meat? I said, no. How can you say that people can eat meat? I said, madam, I didn't say so. I didn't say that they can eat meat. But I only said, first start practicing yoga, all this will drop away. But still she was not pleased. She wanted me to tell everybody, before you even close your nose, you must give up meat. And go and buy a health food store. I kept quiet. What can I do? I kept quiet. Then we discussed all these, you know, security problems, you know, the problem of survival, etc., etc. And then I looked at her and said, do you approve of the war? She said, of course, how can we live? You know, we would be wiped out in a few days if we didn't fight. I said, madam, do you fight? Said, no, I don't go. I don't. What do you do? Oh, my son is in the army. My nephew is in the army. Then, what do you do? Whenever they come, you know, I need jerseys and sweaters for the soldiers. I do whatever I can to further our defense. I contribute liberally in money and this, that, that. And I kept quiet. To build a pension. Kept quiet for a few minutes. I looked at her and she was also looking at me. Everybody was anxiously waiting. What's the next move? The chess. I said, madam, if I called you a cannibal, how would you react? She didn't know what to do. What does a cannibal do? A cannibal kills other people in order that he may live. Isn't that exactly what you are doing? You are having other people killed, including your children, in order that you may live, no? The same silence prevailed there. She burst into tears for a couple of minutes. Then, as soon as we got up, she gave me a good hug and said, you are right. The only thing is, you don't eat flesh. You don't have to. You bury them. Bury the flesh. Maturity consists in being able to see the truth. Not this assumed or imagined truth. A sort of God who drops from heaven. That God is light. That light is enlightenment. And this enlightenment must provide us from day to day, from hour to hour, from moment to moment. That God who is light must provide us enlightenment from day to day, from hour to hour, from moment to moment, to see. Am I euphemistically bluffing myself that I am mature? What am I doing? Am I honest? Honest even to myself? Huh? Whether we are honest to one another or not, that's a different story. We have thousands and thousands of rules, just as The Jewish people have, how many of them? 375 rules or so to obey. We have also got, Hindus have also got 1,000 rules, and the Buddhists have got 672 rules to be followed and so on. We never do that. Again, we are extremely clever. One rule contradicts the other. One rule says thou shalt not utter a falsehood, and the other rule says in order to preserve the honor of your parents and of your guru of so and so, so and so, or in order to bring about a wedding. There's a strange rule among the Hindus that if by bluffing you can consummate a wedding, you are all right. You can get a girl married off by bluffing. One of my own aunts did it very beautifully. She's an old widow. And there was a girl in the family. And this old woman was interested in getting her married off. She went to a neighboring village. And there was a boy. The boy knew this girl when they were small. And she went to this boy and said, what about marrying that girl? He agreed, of course. He knew the whole family, everything's known. You see, in our Indian villages, the girls, once they reach the age of 10, 12, they are usually not seen very much outside. So he knew the boy, and he knew the girl, and he said, all right. And the wedding was arranged and performed. The boy was a first-class musician. And so all of us crowded around him. He said, come on, let's have a concert by you on your own wedding day. Why not? Why must we hire somebody else? Right. And yes, for about 2 or 3 hours, he sang beautifully, celestially. Now, when he agreed to marry this girl, he asked the old woman, can she sing? That is, I knew her when she was small. Now, can she sing? She said, of course she can sing. So he had agreed. Because his life was music, so he had agreed. And now, after this concert on the wedding day, he looked at his old woman. The old woman was sitting there, shaking her head. She said, what about the girl? Ask her to come and sing. He looked at him mischievously. She doesn't know how to sing. He was cross. Yeah, but you said the other day that she can sing. Yes, she can sing if you teach her. I didn't tell you a lie, did I? So you see, we have these rules. One contradicts the other. When I want to do a thing, I quote this rule. When I don't want to do a thing, I quote that rule. I can bluff everybody in this world. It's so easy. So simple. Why do I do so? Am I mature? Am I being honest? And do I see this world with the eyes of enlightenment? I don't remember exactly, but approximately I'll give you the story. It seems one day Socrates was sitting somewhere and a murderer with blood dripping from his dagger ran past him. Behind him came a Roman soldier. He recognized Socrates sitting there and questioned him. Socrates, did you see a murderer run this way? Socrates looked up to him and said, what do you mean, murderer? Huh? What is a murderer? A killer. Ah, I see a soldier. No! One who murders another during peacetime. A butcher. Huh? One who murders another in his own home. Doctor. And there is also an executioner and so on, so, you know, all that. In how many ways we indulge in the same thing, calling it different names. If this girl says, I eat fish, Swamiji. Ah, I'm horrified. She comes and says, I have seafood sometimes. Seafood. Oh, that's all right. Of course it's all right. What is the difference between fish and seafood? Only change the name. Change the word that you use. It becomes all right. Don't call it murder. Self-defense. I killed him in self-defense. Everything is all right. I married someone. The other man seems to be nicer. I'm not committing adultery. I'm going to divorce him tomorrow. Now it's all right. Otherwise it is primitive, polyandry, polygamy, primitive. But no, divorce. Each day you can go on divorcing one after the other. There's no problem. You see the fundamental principle here, glorious principle here. I am still doing the same thing. And the moment I recognize it, I become mature. The moment I recognize that whatever is being done, I am still the immature baby playing with the doll and sucking its thumb. I am also doing the same thing. I don't suck my thumb anymore. I smoke a cigar or something else. Psychologically, I suck my thumb, feel great, proud, haughty, happy. Enjoying my own glory, self-aggrandizement. That's all sucking the thumb, isn't it? What's the difference? That child says, my thumb is nice. And the Swami says, my book is nice. What is the difference? What is the difference? Essential difference. Aren't we merely substituting one set of dolls, one set of foolishness, one set of absurdities for another set of absurdities and calling ourselves mature? That is immaturity. Unless this goes, even if we stand in front of God, that God cannot enlighten us. We will trade Him. This, give us this day our daily bread, has been interpreted in 1,000 ways, spiritually, esoterically, super spiritually, all sorts of things. And the same type of prayer is found in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam, and so on, so on. Give us this, give us prosperity, and so on. And then we come back and rationalize, interpret them in various ways. But we are still worried about our daily bread. Let's face it. And since God is not a baker, he is hiding himself. We don't know how to pray. We don't pray to God at all. We only pray upon God. P-R-E-Y. Give me this. No wonder he doesn't want to come anywhere near us. We'll tear him to pieces in 2 days. And then we sit round, rationalize. We sit round, find an explanation for all the stupidities that we do. This is another simple truth that occurred to me. I was watching myself one day. Anything that I feel like rationalizing, anything that I feel needs explanation, justification, which is rationalization, is wrong. Why do I justify my actions, or why do I defend my actions, why do I rationalize my actions? Because there is a sense of guilt inside, isn't it? Isn't that so? Did you ever tell anybody why you are alive? Have you ever explained to somebody why you are alive? Why not? Because you don't feel guilty being alive. If you drink a cup of coffee or if you take a glass of wine, and I am looking, you want to explain. You want to justify your conduct. You want to rationalize it. Why? There is a sense of guilt. Isn't it? Another sign of immaturity. All these will have to go. And a life of enlightenment where I see a doll as a doll and a baby as a baby. The moment I am able to see, nothing need be renounced, nothing need be thrown away, nothing need be acquired, because that is as bad as this. The thing that you are going to acquire, the so-called self-realization or God-realization, I saw God with 14 arms and 24 noses. Another doll. Isn't it? Nothing is necessary. And nothing is unnecessary. This is a carpet. Keep it clean. This is wooden tiles. Keep them clean. There is no need to reject something. Why must I reject a shadow? Where is the need to reject a shadow? I don't have to. I see the shadow as a shadow and the substance as the substance. When we do that, we are mature. It is only then that anything that we read, anything that we hear, anything that we see becomes valuable. त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योन्मुक्षीयमां तान् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् मृत्योन्मुक्षीयमां तान् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः मुद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति।